Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, my fellow colleagues, project managers, business professionals everywhere. This is an interview with a founding member of the PMP exam, Mr. Lee R. Lambert, CEO of Lambert Consulting Group, a founder of the PMP and a PMI fellow. Lee is a distinguished project management professional and a PMI fellow with over 54 years of extensive experience in the field. After a dynamic corporate career, Lee has been instrumental in educating over 50,000 professionals from 27 countries in project management since 1984. As one of the founding members of the PMP exam, Lee's pragmatic approach to project management has earned a stellar reputation. Known as a pragmatic evangelist, Lee's presentations are uniquely effective, blending humor with a profound understanding of project management, making complex concepts accessible and engaging. Welcome, Lee, to our conversation here.
Thanks. I'm really glad to be with you, Phil. I've been looking forward to this.
Absolutely. Lee, my first question for you today is about your middle initial. What does R stand for, and is there a story behind it?
Well, there's not a big story, but it stands for Roy, and everybody thinks my name is Leroy. So I've made to make it just an R after my first name. But other than that, no, there's nothing. I wish I had some exciting story to tell you about when I got that name, but my parents stuck me with it early on.
Lovely. Lovely. Lee, let's jump into a question about your professional journey. Who introduced you to this term, project management? Where did you hear about this term for the first time?
My first exposure came at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory in Livermore, California, a DOE-operated facility. And it turns out that they brought me there from the state of Utah to California, and they needed project managers. And I got the job. I didn't know what the job was, but I knew it was a big increase in pay, and I like to go to California. So that's how I ended up in the business, sort of a roundabout way. But at that time, I'd really never heard of project management. My education was in engineering, and the word project management really never came up.
Interestingly, which of the engineerings was it?
A mechanical engineer.
Oh, mechanical. I see.
Actually, what I did was, because I'm kind of lazy that way, I didn't want to go to too many years of school, so I took an abbreviated technical school and got a degree in engineering design. And that's basically, it was a mechanical engineer job, but truncated without all the grammar and the, you know, science and all that, just straight out hard shot engineering work.
Gotcha. Well, Lee, let's talk about the evolution of project management. How have you seen the field of project management evolve since the 70s and the 80s? Are there any challenges or changes that particularly stand out to you?
Well, yeah, I'm sort of outspoken in this regard. I don't think project management is brain surgery. I really think it fundamentally hasn't changed, the process and the concept, but we've come up now with all these new tools to help project managers be more effective. But otherwise, I don't think there's been any big changes. Now, the latest change that I think will have a significant impact is this AI thing. I think one of the problems with project management is we can never get good, sound decision support information in a timely way because we did a lot of it by hand. There was a lot of hand calculations, hand manipulations. Well, with the advent of AI coming along, I think that's going to change a lot. I just did a post yesterday on earned value with that in mind, and it has over 500 views. Wow. And 127 questions in one day. So it's obviously a hot topic. And I think with AI, I can see earned value taking its proper place in project management.
Wow. Lee, let me jump on that topic. You know, we share that earned value liking. But let's talk about the future of earned value and why earned value is so despised in industry. Do you have anything to say about that?
Oh, I do indeed. I think that some of the things that came out of my post that, you know, management says they want it, but then they don't act like they do. And the key to this working or not working is better planning. And the one thing that management won't give us as project managers is enough time to do good planning. And so if you're going to ground earned value on a bad plan, all you got's a mess. And that's kind of what happened in the application of earned value in a generic. I mean, I can force you to do it contractually if you're a government operation, but I want people to use it because it adds value to what they do. And I think until we can get to a place where we have confidence that we've planned to the right depth with the right numbers of work packages and so on, I don't think it'll have a chance. So I'm hoping with the advent of AI, that's going to help us a lot.
Great stuff, Lee. If you were going to advise a CEO on project types to not compromise earned value on, which project types would those be?
Well, that's the thing is I see there are specific applications, and I think that to say that I'm going to use earned value on an Agile is a bit folly to me because it really takes some consistency in the scope of what it is you're trying to deliver. And if it's moving around all the time, then earned value data really doesn't bring to the party what it should. So I think anything that's more of I'm going to use the word construction just because it's kind of connotates what I'm after, something with more of a relatively fixed scope, that there's some understanding of what the outcome is supposed to be, and it's been based on a plan that has integrated all the work that needs to be done so that anything that starts to go wrong anywhere on the plan is going to immediately be highlighted and drawn to the attention of decision makers.
Beautiful, Lee. We got a comment in from one of our subscribers, and we want to say a huge shout out to all those who are watching. And they are concurring with you, Lee, that AI will help improve EVM and project management. We got a rather interesting comment here that says, but we still have to weed out bad apples as PMs. Lee, what are bad apple PMs? Because I know you've been in this field for too long to have not encountered them. So what would a bad apple PM be like? Just let it loose.
Well, these are my estimates. Now, I should have done a disclaimer in the beginning. None of these are the opinions of PMI or the attitudes of PMI. They're Lee Lambert. Okay. Now that I did that, there are, I'm guessing, 200,000 or 300,000 PMPs who aren't. I think we call them paper PMPs. I use it jokingly all the time. They paid their money. They took their exam. They passed it. And then they went back doing things just like they always did it before. It was a peer pressure. It was a management pressure. And if you know it's important that you get the PMP, then you'll figure out a way to get it. But the thing about a PMP is they have to be grounded in experience. I personally think that three 3 years experience, it's not enough experience to consider myself a PMP. I need to have run projects for a period of time where I've exposed myself to all of the problems that are going to come up so that I don't get blindsided. So that's the bad apples they're talking about. When I do a program with a bunch of PMPs, I always ask them, how many are PMPs? Oh my gosh, all the hands shoot up. Everybody's so excited. And then I ask another question. I say, how many of you work with one that isn't? And you would be shocked at how many people, although some don't because they're sitting right next to the person that's the one that isn't, but some people raise their hand. I mean, it's obvious. A real PMP knows an imitation.
Oh, wow. That's a quotable quote right there, Lee. I got to put that on a book somewhere. My goodness. Lee, based on what you just said, you are the advice guy, right? And I know this from the PMI chapter. Because you got this great reputation. Help people out, Lee, with this next question. With your extensive experience, what advice would you give to project managers to excel in their careers?
Yeah, I do a whole program on this point. I think that the key that I try to make to them is, first of all, start young. focus on what you want to be when you grow up, and then select the experience and education that fits that environment. Now, the problem we have is a lot of people are becoming project managers or trying to. They think it's because of the money. They think they're going to make more money as a project manager. Well, if that's the only reason you're becoming a project manager, good luck. You have to have a passion for what it is we do. And what it is we do is we deliver. We do it without body count so that people can do their job and do it well. And if they need advice, you got to remember project managers. One of the reasons I got into this field is somebody told me once that project managers don't do work. And I was intrigued by that question. So I looked into it. And sure enough, they're right. Project managers don't do work. They get work done through others. That's the way you multiply your value that you contribute, not by individually. You can only do what one person can do. But if you can monitor and mobilize dozens of people, then that where you're making a big benefit to the organization.
Wow. I love that, Lee. Lee, based on what you just said, incidentally, we got a chat in and the chat says, Lee, can you kindly express your thoughts of the statement, these days, AI will take away your job. Now, based on what you said about getting work done, what is your perspective on AI taking away the PM's job?
Well, I think that whole, I'm going to call it a rumor, Phil. I think that whole rumor was started by people who were nervous that something was going to happen and lose their job. Because anybody with reasonable thoughts would understand that because project management is a information-based environment, then the more information, the faster and the more accurate I can do, it's not going to replace me. It's going to make me more valuable because of the insights I can provide management. I always tell management, do you want to know if a project's going south after 3 months of a year, or do you want to wait till the end of the year and find your $1 million overrun? And so the earlier I can give that decision-making information to the decision maker. A lot of project managers think they're the decision makers. Joke's on them. They're not. My job is to deliver to the person who is the decision maker what they need to make those decisions.
Lovely stuff, Lee. Let's talk about this pivotal point in your career where you were asked to be on a board for the PMP exam. Were you nominated by someone in the PMI leadership, or was it, how did that happen?
The way it happened was that I got a lot of recognition early on. I joined PMI in 78, and I immediately started to write articles for the what was then called the PMI Journal, PMI Network. They had two publications. And did the same thing I do now. I expressed my opinion. I thought what should be done and what could be done. And I did that in a fairly consistent way. And those got printed, and suddenly my name got known. Nobody knew who the hell I was. My name got known because, hey, this guy's writing these articles. And look at this. I kind of like what he said. So the next thing that happened when I moved to Columbus, Ohio, where I live now, to help start a project management division, they wrote a letter to the CEO saying we'd like to have Lee's time to be one of five people focused on creating a new certification process for project management. And we'd like his area of concern to be consulting and R&D. The division I started was an R&D division. And they said that would be his two areas of involvement. And so I went to my CEO at the time and said, you know, this is probably not a bad idea. If we're going to call ourselves a project management division, probably be pretty wise to have somebody participate in that particular activity. So I was able to convince him that made sense, both from a personal and a professional standpoint. So that's how I got started on it. And then it just evolved. We just had meeting after meeting. I mean, it wasn't a bad spot up in the hills of Western Carolina. It's pretty darn nice, actually. So we'd hold weekend meetings it took almost 3 years to go live. But there were five of us, one woman and four men, all of whom have passed now except me. And I don't plan on leaving soon. And so I think we were on to something. I think that people began to realize if every other profession has a certification approach, why wouldn't? Well, that's because at that time, project management was a hobby. It wasn't a job description. It was what you did in your spare time. And so what PMI did, and that's really one of the things that they set out to do, was create a profession. And they certainly have achieved that without any doubt.
Wow. Lee, let me ask you, what is the most significant thing you believe the PMP has accomplished in the world?
Well, I think it's brought focus to the profession. I think let's not kid ourselves. People have been doing project management long before PMI came along. It just wasn't a designated profession. So I think it did that. It converted what I call a hobby into a significant profession. When you think about the fact there's almost 1.5 million PMPs, I mean, that's really like a drop in the ocean to the number of project managers there are currently operating in the world. And they're predicting 20 million new ones by the end of the decade are going to be needed. So it's really brought it to the fore of everybody thinking about why are these projects failing? We've got professionals, projects are failing because it's not about the PMP certification. Mm. It's about doing what good project managers do.
Wow. Lee, you brought up a very important point. There's such a huge disparity between the 1.5 million you talked about and the rest of the world of PMI as the CAPM, ACP, Discipline Agile, and other certifications. Why do you think there's such a large disparity in those numbers?
Well, I think part of that is because when we first started rolling out the PMP, we marketed it as a general certification. In other words, it wasn't a specialty. It was because then the only real specialty was scheduling. There were a lot of scheduling around back in those days, and they thought that's what project management was. So we didn't want them to focus on any specific area, and that's the way we started to roll it out. Now, as we did that, and as we saw the numbers of the PMP go up, we saw maybe there's a need for specialization. Maybe a person can be a PMP, but really spend most of their time on scheduling, most of the time on risk management. And so we started to create these specialty certificates. But the problem is, the PMP is still the gold standard. Everybody wants the PMP. That's an indicator that you you know what the heck you're talking about. And so only the real specialists are getting the specialty certificates. Like, I just congratulated one today that got his scheduling. And I basically told him, I said, you know, it's really a shame we don't have more scheduling professionals, because it's an area that I think we do a lousy job on in our project. Yep. I think we do a terrible job. And if we had more specialists, then maybe we could increase the quality of those plans and schedules. And the same with risk. I think risk is underutilized, just horribly. So I think that we're seeing that. And to point out the disparity, as you refer to it, is that we kind of started late with the CAPM, which is basically like a PMP in training, really. That's what it amounts to when you think about it. And so now we're saying, look, if you haven't decided if you want to be a PMP, if you don't think it's going to add a lot of value to your skill set, then get the CAPM, the Certified Associate Project Manager, and that will help you make the final decision. Mm. That's what you want to be when you grow up or not. So we now have 70,000.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
By quite a ways, the second most popular after the PMP. And in fact, in some of the magazines, the CAPM has actually been identified as the most in demand, with the PMP second. Wow. So I think that was a great move. I wish the heck I could have said I thought of that earlier, but I didn't. But I think whoever did put it into the system made a wise choice. And now you're seeing heavy marketing on the CAPM because they see that we've got a lot of, if we're going to have 20 million by the end of the decade, we got to get them in the pipeline. We've got to get some people that are ready to move into that role. So I think the CAPM will continue to grow pretty rapidly.
I absolutely agree, Lee. And actually, I got CAPM certified after my PMP because I kept hearing it's not a cakewalk exam. So I decided to try it out for myself.
That's right. Absolutely.
Lee, let's talk about the PMP. Your 3 years meeting with these four awesome individuals. You must have had some squabbles and arguments and, well, let's just say conflict. I don't know. Do you have any flashbacks about that?
Yeah, I call it nightmares, not flashbacks. the biggest discussion, we had several. I was involved in most of them. But the one that we really spent the most time, and this is one of the fellows on this was a president of PMI, Ken Hartley. You might know that name. Ken had strong opinions, and he was a great leader. He was president twice, the only man that's ever been president twice. And our discussion was about, what do you call this thing? What do you call this thing? And they wanted to call it, all but me, wanted to call it Project Management Professional.
Wow.
Project Management Professional. Well, they wanted to call it. That's not what they wanted to call it. They wanted to call it something that didn't have anything to do with what we were trying to achieve. And so I said, no, okay, look, if we're going to say professional project manager, I don't think that's exactly what we're after. I said, well, how about this? I said, think about this from that standpoint. Somebody that is working in a project management environment, in other words, an organization that has implemented project management, do they really need to be a PMP, or do they just have to have a good knowledge of project management so they can talk the language, so they can understand what's being said? That was my position. And they said, no, we want to have professional project managers. I said, well, you're selling yourself short because you're limiting the market. There's going to be a lot of people that could benefit from it that won't do it because they're not going to be a project manager. They're going to be working in an environment that has implemented projects. 4 days we argued about that. 4 days. And I finally convinced them. I said, what you're going to do, and I must admit that it was a little bit of a marketing thought that I had, is that we just broaden the market by tenfold. Because now instead of just project managers, a lot of people can benefit by getting a PMP. And the best example of that is I sold the Sprint account back when I worked for ESI. When I sold the Sprint account, that was my reasoning. I said, let's just not train your project managers. Let's train everybody that has anything to do with project management in a regular way so that communication will be sound and valid and everybody will understand. So they finally decided to do that. It meant millions of dollars to them. That was a very, very big decision. There were times we'd have 11 instructors on site, 11 different classes going at the same time. And when we found out, when we started to look at what the makeup of the audience was, maybe 20% project managers. Everybody else was project support people. And they proved themselves. They proved themselves to Sprint that they added a lot of value. And so that's the main argument we had. Some of the others were, what did it take to qualify? Back in the old days, it was just three categories, education, experience, and service to the community. Of course, it's clearly gotten much more complex than that now, which it should have been, by the way. And I was in charge of qualification back in the old days, and I got to be honest with you, I didn't spend a whole lot of time. If I could add something up real quick, qualified. My opinion was, if you're going to sign a code of ethics, you certainly wouldn't lie about your application, would you? I believed in honesty. I believed that if people signed that code of ethics, then they were saying, yeah, I've done all those things. Well, we learned the hard way. That's not exactly true. So now we've got a little bit more rigor in how we allow people to sit for the exam.
Great stuff, Lee. I'm curious, you mentioned ESI, which is an organization that everyone knew. Were you with ESI for a long time?
I was with them. I went over there probably in 1982 or 83, right just before we released the PMP. By then I was pretty much into training. I decided, well, that's the kind of place I want to be. They're selling project management training to corporations all over the world. They linked up with George Washington, which is very smart, so that you could do 7 courses and get a master's certificate from George Washington in project management. So it had the marketing. I had fun. They were, the more people they could get in the room, that the more they put in. They've been sold about 3 times since then. Each one that sells them makes less money. They just hit the timing right. It was Carl Pritchard. Now you may know Carl.
I know Carl.
Pritchard and I used to call those the pig trough days because it didn't matter what class you threw in the trough, the pigs would come eat it. And so he and I used to have a lot of fun.
Oh my God.
With the pig trough days. And well, the only argument we ever had was who was number one or number two. And of course I disagreed with his choice. He did with mine. But we made a lot of friends, and a lot of people that I still talk to today are people I've run into at ESI that have become very good friends and very good project managers.
Absolutely. And speaking of your name and your middle name, isn't there a Leroy who was at ESI?
Yeah, Leroy Ward's the guy who hired me. I had the interview with Leroy, and I told my wife at the time after the interview, I don't think I want to work for this guy. I don't like him. And she said, well, don't you think that's a little bit of snap judgment? I said, I don't know, just something about him. So she talked me out of that, and I went to work for him. And he was, without any question, the greatest manager I've ever worked for. just an unbelievable guy. Very smart, very recognizing you got to give people freedom to become who they need to become. And then, of course, when ESI started being acquired, he was ahead of it for a little while. And then, I think his mom got sick and he moved to New York. And I just, it's funny that you brought his name up because I was just thinking about him the other day. I used to see him once in a while at PMI events and he writes a little bit. But I haven't seen him, so now I'm worried. I wish I'd have checked it out.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of activity from Leroy, but one of my mentors, rest his soul, Ginger Levin, was good friends with Leroy, and they wrote together. And I was always aware of what they did together in project management. They had some books. But Lee, now that things have changed, the goalpost has moved. ESI, like you said, is almost nowhere on the map.
Yep.
The new normal today seems to be different from the training organizations back in the day, like Rita's organization and others. Apart from ESI and Rita, are there any notable organizations, apart from yours, that come to mind as being the leaders back in the day? Or were there no leaders back in the day other than those?
Well, the only one that's really, I mean, I'm probably way off on this. I haven't looked around, but the only one that's really still around that's known is VelociTeach. And they pulled out of the REP/ATP program, as did quite a few of the leading instructors. They didn't feel like they wanted to pay the 10 or 12 grand, whatever it is, to be at ATP. They're doing fine. I talk to them all the time. they seem to be doing just fine. So their decision was okay. I think some others might have not done that, but I know Carl was an ATP for a while till he got sick, and then he liquidated everything, and now he's back, not back whole, but he's sure back way better than he has been.
So I'm calling
for him all the time. I see him and talk to him once in a while.
Lovely. I mean, he's one of the real ones.
I hate
to say it, but you know, talking about paper PMPs, I think we can say paper PMP pushers. We'll talk about that another day, Lee.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, I that's the one thing I've hit, not just me. We've hit Pierre with that he's working hard on is the integrity of the exam. I mean, we literally find people selling the exam on LinkedIn. Send us your money. We'll send you a certificate. We'll take the test for you. I mean, it's ridiculous. Well, that's what happens with money. You know that. If these shysters can find a way to make a penny, they'll do it. They don't care about you. And so our integrity is in question in some cases. Sometimes people write me, I don't have anything to do with that. I don't work for PMI. I just do stuff around PMI, and I'll get letters saying, well, this is just not right. And they'll send me an ad from India, if in that particular case, that says, send me your money, I'll send you a certificate, don't worry about the test. So PMI used to not, they used to ignore that, say, well, you're going to get some of that. They don't ignore it anymore. I think Pierre's made it pretty clear that if he's going to stand tall on the PMP, he's going to know he's standing on a sound foundation.
I love that, and definitely continue along those lines that you mentioned. The REP program, honestly, great program, REP program. Transparency, a lot of collaboration. Not so sure about where the turning point has gone, because there used to be the REP logo all over the place. People were evangelists for the REP program. We don't really get that happening today, but I know it has had to do with leadership. So I'm going to ask you, if you were going to choose from your friend Ken, rest his soul, the one who went twice, and all the others, let's talk about the PMI Mount Rushmore. Who would your four be for the president, the PMI presidents, that you say are most pivotal for shaping the firm?
Well, we've had some bad ones. I shouldn't say bad. That's not fair. We've had that I don't think they were project managers in the first place, but trying to run a project management organization. When we started to switch to people with a little more credibility, that helped. I like, you know, when we, when Mark Langley took over for the one that left, I forget now who was before him. When Mark Langley,
Greg, was it Greg Gregory?
Yeah, Greg Ballesteros. Well, I'll be honest with you, he was one of the bad ones. And so if you look at Mark Langley, he's a finance guy, but yes. For one thing, he had Ken Hartley's ear. They were good friends. Mm. And I think Ken had a big impact on how PMI is an organization. You got to remember, PMI was all volunteer in the early days, not even so early. Even the top dog, somebody like Pierre would have been a volunteer back in those days. And so when we started to convert to a business model, it required people that knew what they were doing. So Mark had some good background, good skills, good financial acumen. I think he helped a lot. Sunil, bless his heart, I love Sunil. He's a great guy. He just wasn't the right fit at the time. Now, maybe later he would have been, but at the time he tried to become a profit-making business too soon. He wanted to sell stuff, and that sort of that rubs people the wrong way. And I told Pierre this. It's been a challenge we've lived up to for years. Is all PMI cares about is money. So I interviewed him recently. I asked him that question. He had a great answer. The guy's he's really thought through this job, and he gave just a fantastic answer. Yeah, we got money in the bank. Of course we do. But look at all the things he's doing. Those things all cost money. People don't realize that. They think, I mean, you're paying $139 to be a member. They think that's a big deal. We've only got 700,000 members. It's not like we own the world or anything. So they have to supplement some of those revenue sources. But I think that Pierre, unless there's something I don't know about, and I doubt there is. He's too transparent. I mean, he's just a great guy. He'll talk to you about anything. Unless he has something happen that really changes the playing field, I think he's going to be a long-term success.
I hope for the same. So it sounds like our Mount Rushmore for in your eyes, definitely Ken.
Oh yeah. One.
Sounds Ken, like Mark.
Ken was great. Mark Langley was good, based on the fact he's a finance guy. Nothing against finance guys, but he did a good job, and he still comes around. He was on our cruise 2 years ago. Langley was as one of the PMI cruise members. So he's taking an active role in the business. But again, well, you saw what Pierre did when he came in. He within reason, started to replace key positions.
Oh yeah.
These were people that had a lot of tenure. They'd been there a long time. They'd done a good job, but they weren't project management people. They weren't as skilled in what you need to be skilled in. So he wasn't afraid to make changes. I asked him that question in my interview too. He handled that like a champ. He just, you know, certain people needed to be in certain positions. And he's now got himself in a position where he's got the right team, I think. And now he's gone on to say, okay, look, you're a team member at Project Management Institute. You will be certified. If you're not certified, you better get busy. I mean, even Brantley is a 26-year veteran. Some joke that they think she was born there. but the fact of the matter is, she'd been working all that time, working hard, getting lots of things, had no certification. And so immediately, of course, when Pierre said that, she went and got it. So it wasn't like she couldn't have had it. She just never was pushed to get it. And so then everybody in the organization at a reasonable level is being told to have at least one certificate. They're not saying it has to be PMP. They'd like it to be CAPM if that's the only one you're going to have. But the fact of the matter is they're only saying, look, everybody needs to have some kind of a certification.
I can tell you, Lee, I was just so excited and over the moon when I somehow got to the PMI page of, you know, leaders. I'm like, what happened here? What magic happened?
Yeah, no, that's right.
Lee, we got a question here. It says, what are your thoughts on the disconnect with academia and industry when it comes to project management or earned value management? Will AI help connect academia and industry in the near future? I'll let you answer that, Lee.
Let me look around, see if I can find my soapbox. this is a very critical. If I start to talk about a pipeline that needs 20 million new people, if we don't link integrated with academia, they're not going to be there. They're not going to be there when we need them. Now, this movement started. I'm working with some universities. Others are working with universities who are integrating project management into their engineering curriculum. So that now it's not just something you mentioned a couple times in a quarterly lecture. Now they're actually giving learning opportunities. And in some organizations, they're actually encouraging graduates of their program to sit for the CAPM as soon as they graduate. And so they're trying to understand. So I don't even remember this, but somebody told me that we used to have a real tight link. Everybody that I worked with back in the old days in the 70s and 80s were academia, were professors. Most of the key people were professors, engineering professors in most cases. But then all of a sudden, for some reason, that got disconnected and we went back to individuals. Let's work with individuals. And so now we're trying to reconstruct that relationship. I just did a thing with Morgan State, an article for a magazine that they have that really pointed out the needs, but basically this question that's been asked here, what we need to do, and they're going to bring me in to do a lecture for their engineering group in the next few months. But so I think people are thinking about it. I know Pierre's thinking about it because we talked about it. And so I think we're going to have to do that. We're not going to be able to satisfy the need for project managers all through PMI. And I think that's another reason Pierre is trying to expand to where he's collaborating more with IPMA and APM and the other project management organizations to get everybody moving in the right direction.
Yeah. Great
and
stuff.
Project management, I gotta say, I'm a big supporter of earned value. Maybe that's because I learned it from GE and they did things right back in those days. But I think if people would wake up and realize that if I plan like I'm supposed to plan, using earned value is piece of cake.
Thank you, Lee. I've got a question based on what you just mentioned. You know, we've had this conversation, but let's go ahead and give him his flowers. He's gone, but the great Jack Welch. Let's talk about your stay at GE. What was the main, if you're going to give it, three major things that you learned or that bettered your career from your time at GE? What would they be?
First off, I learned that all the engineering education I got was not wasted. Engineers think like project managers should think in most cases. So learned that right away. I learned that I was not what would be deemed a good engineer. I didn't have that passion for engineering. I did have the passion for people. I'm a people guy. And so I learned that when somebody who has passion runs into someone who's willing to let go and let them express their passion, there's really no limit to what you can do. So I moved to this organization in Sunnyvale from a more staid GE group in Pleasanton, California, and met a guy named Tom Brownell. He was going to be my manager. And I started to tell him, my old boss and I didn't see eye to eye, let's put it that way. And so I started to tell him, you know, why am I down here in Sunnyvale looking for a job? Here's what he said to me. I don't care. He said, I don't care why you're coming here. I only care that you want to be here and that I'm going to allow you to do what you need to do to be successful. He's the greatest teacher I've ever had from that standpoint. People will grow if you let them. So from that, he said, I said, well, what can I do that's not engineering? He said, well, we get this earned value thing that just came in and we need trainers. And that's basically how I got to train. I learned from a company called Decision Planning Corporation, which at that time was all former Air Force guys. They worked in consulting, making a buttload of money. And so I learned from the best. And from that point on, I just carried it forward. And, you know, I certainly didn't teach all earned value by any stretch of imagination, but it was a segue into the training world. So opportunity, you got to have passion. You got to have opportunity. A lot of people have passion. They just never get the opportunity, but I was fortunate enough to get both.
Wow. That is so interesting to hear, Lee. I got a feedback for you about your perspective on people getting certified. This is from Delita, one of my mentees, ACP, talking about the channels that PMI has made available. She took advantage of the Agile Certified Practitioner. She says, I like your perspective on that, that everyone should be certified if they're in a certain role. I see that in my field today. Not anyone not certified has to get certified and basically reapply for their jobs. It may seem unfortunate for some, but I think it's important. So, I think what Pierre did is just is amazing. I got really excited just seeing that. I wondered, was there a magic wand and everyone just became PMPs or what happened? So that was really interesting. We got another feedback, Lee. This is an awesome discussion. Thank you, Deidre. And let's move on to another question I have for you. This is a more trivial question. Ice cream or yogurt, Lee?
ice cream for me.
Okay, let's talk about colors that you like. Which color do you find most calming or energizing?
I'm a blue guy.
Nice. Okay. Be careful with this one. Some people might take offense. Do you have a favorite football team?
Yeah, I do, and they probably will. Oakland Raiders. Well, Las Vegas Raiders now. They're not the real Raiders anymore. I was a sports writer in California covering the Raiders.
Really?
For a major daily, and I had LaMonica and Biletnikoff and Art Toms, you name it, at my house for a party. Wow. They destroyed my house and became friends as a result. So I've always been faithful to the Raiders.
I think that was a good answer. Okay, let's talk about another one, Lee. Do you enjoy listening to music? And if so, which kind of music do you listen to?
I do. I'm a country western guy.
Ah.
The beauty about country western is the lyrics actually say something.
That's true.
Yeah, I really do like the lyrics of country music.
Makes sense. Where's your cowboy hat? You don't wear it a lot these days.
No, I don't. I have a special hat they gave me in Calgary at the Stampede when I was a keynote up there. They do what they call a white hat ceremony. So I've got that. I still wear that occasionally. If I go to Calgary, I always wear it.
Okay, this is another fun one. If you could have dinner with any historical figure, who would it be and why?
Who would it be and why? It'd probably be a football coach, but I'm not sure which one. I hate to say it, but the Ohio State guy that I liked is gone now. He's an announcer now. There's something about... I'm not going to say that Alabama guy. I won't even say his name. the beauty of those coaches, and I learned this a long time ago from coaches. The key element of coaching a team is to getting all the players to buy in to what you're selling. That's all the big time coaches will say that. In post game interviews, they'll say it almost every single time. Well, that's all the boys are working hard. They buy into what we want them to do. And I think that's the key. That's commitment. That's basically what we're talking. And so I've developed some high-performance teams that actually PMI wrote one up in a magazine, called it a miracle project, where I developed a high-performance team that got 3 years worth of work done in 18 months. You can do it, but you've got to get commitment. You got to get buy-in. to what they do. Right now, people are still, a lot of people are still just focused on getting the job done, getting my paycheck. That's where their focus is, okay? Baby needs shoes, got a Mercedes payment. So why are you working so hard? Well, because I need money. Well, if that's your motivating factor, you, I mean, you'd be successful, but you're never gonna be a real pro.
Speaking of money, Lee, your statement, I want all the money, to Jack in that fateful company where you did the Diabetes Instrument Project. Could you discuss the Diabetes Instrument Project you worked on and just tell us if there were any key lessons learned that you'd like our people to take away?
Yeah, the lesson learned there is you can overcome bad leadership. The guy who was running that company at the time was a former DuPont guy, 6 foot eight, 330 pounds, hated people. Nobody ever saw him. Nobody ever saw Jack. If you saw Jack, he was probably because he was firing you. He didn't like to mess with people. And so I learned that I had to be the buffer between the perception of what Jack was. And by the way, the guy was brilliant. He just hated people. And so I'd have to be the buffer to try to communicate. So everybody came to me complaining about Jack. And so you have to get by that to where you have to understand you still got a job to do. You can spend all day bitching about something, but at the end of the day, you still got a job to do. So why not do it and have fun and enjoy it? We did miracles. We did things that nobody ever heard of. To get that thing done in that amount of time. And it was a $1 billion company. And when it was over, 3 years later, they were acquired by Roche Labs for $11 billion. So wow. it was profitable, no doubt about that. And by the way, I still use it today. I use that meter. That same meter that I ran the project for, that's what I use. It gave me diabetes, I think.
Yeah, I actually did check that out on Amazon. It's on sale. What's it called again?
AccuCheck.
Yes, AccuCheck. I'm like, wow, you've left a long-lasting impression.
It's morphed, obviously, in physical size and configuration two or three times, but it's still the same meter that we designed.
Good stuff. Like, we're winding down now, Lee. So let's talk about the future of project management tools. People are very tool crazy. And I'm curious to know, as project management tools increasingly incorporate AI and machine learning, what fundamental changes, if any, do you anticipate in the way projects are managed over the next decade?
Well, I think the key is going to be, are people willing to learn how to take advantage of the tools? I think the problem we have in project management, I've seen it for sure, is that everybody gravitates to the new shiny thing. they're gravitating that way for one reason. That is, they think it's going to make their job easier. And eventually it may. But when you have a new tool that starts to be used, that's work. You have to work to understand how to capitalize on it, how to use it, how to get the most out of it. Once you've learned all that, then yes, it's going to make your job easier. Nobody's willing to make that front-end investment. They'll start working and say, well, this is a lot harder than I thought it was. I'm going back to the old way. And you start to see that sort of lack of commitment. I'm that way when it first came to Microsoft Project, when it first came out. I just couldn't invest my time how to operate Microsoft Project. but yet the first person I hired in that job that we did in 18 months, the very first person I hired was a Microsoft Project expert.
Oh, brilliant.
Because I was smart enough to know I can't do what I need to do without this guy. Now, he didn't know how important he was because I didn't have to pay him that. But the fact of the matter was, I had him collecting status. I had him inputting status, projecting into the future. I mean, he was the key guy. And wow. I was even to this day, I could go back and interview a lot of they'd have no idea he was so critical to that project.
Wow. And you really hit the nail on the head, Lee, because a lot of leaders, they feel, oh, I don't know this, I'm just not going to use it. But great leadership is bringing in people to complement one's skills. And you have a lot of PMs these days, they're kind of scared that they have to be the person who knows it all. I'm curious to know, if you had the opportunity of choosing three knowledge areas out of the 10, integration, scope, schedule, cost, quality, resources, communications, risk, procurement, and stakeholder, are there three that you would say are your, I'm stranded on an island with three knowledge areas? It's got to be, which ones would those be?
Yeah, I think I can say that. The first one is scope, which is a knowledge area in terms of how do I define scope. This draws me into work breakdown structures and work packages and so on. Scope, that's number one. If you don't do scope right, doesn't matter how many damn tools you have. Okay, so I'm going to get scope right. The next one I would do is scheduling. How do I take the output of my scope development and put it in a framework that says this is doable? I can start now and I'll be done when I want to be done. And then the third one is going to be the people side. Doing what I call skill set match. Because I've defined the scope very well, now I can say for that scope, I need this kind of a performance. And now I can look at what I've got. And unfortunately, we do that terribly. The way we assign resources now is called the availability. If you're available, you do it. But that's not really my skill. You're available, you do it. And so we end up causing our project's problem in the very early stages by not paying attention to the impact of skill set mismatch. So you've got to understand that when somebody asks me how long it's going to take, and it's what I do, and I say 8 hours, it'll take 8 hours. Okay. But if you ask somebody else that's never done it before, only done half of it, he might say 8 hours also, but it's going to take him 16.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you put 8 in the plan then? If it's going to, and then it gets worse because now that same guy is doing maintenance 30% of his time and he's on two other projects. And so he really only has 10% for your job. So now instead of 8 hours, it's like 8 weeks. It's all planning. We do a terrible job of planning. And you know why they say, well, why would I plan? You just didn't change.
Oh, dear. It's hilarious. Lee, we've had such a blast so far. The final question is about remote work, the influence of remote work. We see a lot of people working remotely these days. It's been accepted, it's been adopted. What strategies do you think project managers should implement to maintain team cohesion and productivity? Just like you did on the Accu-Check project, only that now you don't have them all in the building. Imagine if you had a dispersed team on the Accu-Check project. How would you have done this with remote work?
I think that the way I would do it, I've never been in that position, as you say, but what I would do is I happen to think remote work is a great thing. If you have committed, responsible people, because if you're not committed, you're not responsible, you'll just waste away time, remote location, make it appear that you're doing stuff that you're not. So it has to be committed people. Once you have that, what I found, even through the pandemic, I found I was doing more work at home than I would have ever done in an office place because you got no limit on hours. You got nobody bugging you. So I think remote work is a great idea. However, there's nothing that replaces people to people. You can give me a great TV screen and we can have like we're doing right now. It's not the same as being in the same room talking randomly about what we want to talk about. So what I think a lot of companies are doing now is going with the 3x2, three days remote, 2 days come into an office setting where you don't. I mean, remember, you're going to work with some of these people for a long time and there are going to be things that you won't talk about online. You won't talk about it in a visual system. And so I think the 3x2 is a good way to go. My son-in-law is a big shot at a bank, and he hasn't been into his office for over 2 years. And and they just started recently saying, we're thinking we're bringing back some people back. And I don't think he'll be going back. he is. And his wife, my daughter, she'll tell me he does 2 or 3, 4 hours more work every day than he did when he was going in the office. But it's just the freedom to do what you need, what you think needs to be done. So, and there's a lot of trust involved.
Lee, it's been a pleasure. I've got two more questions for you. Do you have a favorite movie or TV show that you could watch over and over again?
Yeah, I do. I was trying to think today, probably Hawaii Five-0.
Oh my, those were the days, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, it's on syndication now. My grandson who lives here with me, he'll sit down and watch 6 or 8 of them in a row.
Oh my, those were the days.
They're beautiful scenery. There's good plots. A little too much killing for me, but but overall, it's a great show. So I enjoy it.
Lovely.
I use TV for entertainment, really.
Awesome. And Lee, the final question today is, when you have free time, what's your go-to activity or hobby, if any?
I've asked that question all the time, and I really don't have one. My go-to is think of something else that hasn't been done yet and write about it. I mean, I love to write. I love to cause people to ask questions because they're learning at that time. So I don't have a day. Like I start my work at 5 in the morning and I'll wrap up about 7 or 8 tonight. And, I'm sitting here at this computer thinking about things I should be doing, thinking about things I could write about. I like to post a lot, as you know. And the reason I post is not to show how smart I am, show people how dumb they are, that they should be thinking about these things. So I write in a way that just introduces a topic that causes people to wonder. And that's pretty much what I do. I don't work. No, everybody knows I don't work. when it comes to work, never been in my vocabulary.
Wow.
Because I don't see any of this as work. I see this as fun.
I love it. Well, Lee, thank you for all that you do for the PMI, doing the ambassador work that has been a very expensive hobby. It's a very expensive hobby because it's taken a toll on life and stuff, but you've done very well. You're handling it. I want to be like you when I grow up, and I'm really grateful for you sharing your time. This is an honor. It's been a long time coming, and I've been following your posts for a very long time, seeing you sporting your cowboy hat, getting all those emails from PMI Phoenix. You're coming up to PMI Phoenix this year, right?
October, yep.
October. Well, it will be a pleasure. I'll make sure I'm there to welcome you and see you in action. What are you going to be speaking about?
I don't know. I'll think of something.
Well, thank you to you, and thank you to our viewers for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. This is just part one. We definitely need to do part two because I've got about 30 additional questions that we didn't get around.
I appreciate the feedback and the interaction. I love this format that you're doing. I never know if I don't hear questions or see comments. I don't know what the hell am I missing or what. So this is awesome. Oh, I love this.
Lovely, Lee. Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure. And thank you to our viewers. And we'll see you again, hopefully very soon. Bye for now.